Even the most level-headed of us might find ourselves looking at an old knick-knack or piece of art that's been in the family forever and think, I wonder what that's worth. Larry Mueller here. There are probably a lot more items in your attic whose value is really only sentimental, but once in a while might be a treasure hidden in there too. And while nothing replaces a skilled appraiser for determining the value of your item, technology, I think, has really made it easier for pros and amateurs alike to get good information, and pretty quickly, too. Shirley Bauman is a certified personal property appraiser. She's a registered Wisconsin auctioneer, owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And Shirley, great to have you back.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. I love to be here with your listeners.
Oh, it's always a lot of fun. You've been in the appraisal business for quite a while. How have you seen a change over the years?
Oh, my goodness. When I first started in this business, I was into so many libraries, I can count them all, especially art libraries and historical society libraries. And, of course, that brings to mind the change is the Internet. We have so much information. It's not only when we think of the Internet and antiques, we think of things like eBay, but it's not only the buying and selling that's changed, but it's that information, the research. We can find information about the things we have, do research that way, and we can actually find these auction results now very easily. Big auction houses to the small local auctions keep the results on the Internet. Sometimes we as professional appraisers pay for the databases that hold all that information.
Yeah.
But it's right there. And you know what? Something actually sells for and repeatedly is where we get our values. Not one item one time sold for this or what someone's asking. It's what it actually sold for as a market value. So that's just been a big, big change. And, you know, in the auction business, too, I'm sure if people have been to auctions lately, they've seen that the clerking systems of keeping track of things are now on computers.
Mm-hmm.
But they may also have seen, as they check in, that we can scan their driver's license and get all that information. And in this economy, unfortunately, a lot of auctioneers have had to use information like that because of, unfortunately, bounce checks or things of that nature. So that helps us in that regard. And, of course, we can now take credit and debit cards anywhere with the Square and all of those mm-hmm. kinds of things. And sometimes our technology can mess us up a little bit like it did for me. I had phone messages go bad. So if somebody's called me and hasn't gotten a call back yet, I probably lost the call in that little debacle.
Well, you know, are there particular websites that you recommend for people to help determine the value of an item?
Well, there are a lot of them. I like to use ArtFact and P4A, which stands for Prices for Antiques, but those are paid sites, and the average person probably isn't going to pay for them. Now, Price Miner is a site that keeps track of sales, and that's you can use it one time or charges $10 a month. So if you want to use it, you can pay $10 and use it for a month and research your item that way. Worth Point is another one that's similar, and I think that one's $15 for a trial. And sometimes there's free things you can get. Antiques Navigator is one of those. LiveAuctioneers.com can give you some good information. They're definitely out there.
Mm.
Plus, you know, Google and search engines just come up with a lot of things. And if you go to eBay and you do an advanced search, you can search for completed sales. It will only give you the last, you know, short amount of time, not a real long history, but some things there are quite a few sales in a short period of time. So go and look for those completed listings, and that includes actual sales.
Are there areas that have really increased in interest recently? What are people, you know, sort of dying to get their hands on a little bit?
Well, advertising seems to be the hot, hot thing right now.
Oh.
If you can go and get the porcelain signs where the, you know, the porcelain paint, what ink, whatever it is, baked onto the sign, and it advertises either a product that's still here, but from the early days of that product. Those can go for hundreds and thousands of dollars. Automobile advertising and gasoline, petroliana is the category they call that. It's an amazing thing. I guess people are hanging them in their homes and, you know, man caves and whatever, because they are hot.
Our guest today, Shirley Bauman, who is a registered Wisconsin auctioneer, owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Great to have her along today to talk about appraisals and how technology is changing the world of appraisals. You can join in with your questions. Maybe you have something special you wonder what it might be worth, or you buy things as investments maybe, or more because you just like them, or you collector. What do? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and post question, comment, or even a photo there, and certainly we'd love to hear from you. We have Jean and Madison up with a question, so let's go to her. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. I have some stained glass pieces that I wonder about. The sizes are 6 by 48 inches or 14 by 48 inches, and I think you call it a tulip design. I'm not sure about that.
What, you said they were from about the 1920s or maybe a little older?
Yes, I would assume at least the 1920s.
Well, you know, that period was quite the heyday for stained glass. That's when Louis Comfort Tiffany was really in his prime and was making those beautiful, beautiful stained glass pieces, and a lot of people were replicating that and or trying to. I don't think anybody ever really replicated Louis Comfort Tiffany, but doing similar kinds of things and working in stained glass in that arts and crafts period, as we call it. And it's hard to know exactly how to value your piece, but I would certainly think it would have good value. And the things we look for is, are there any cracks or breaks? Are the glass pieces in there tightly, the leading between the pieces? What about the color? What does it look like? If it's really rich in color, and when the sun shines through it, if it really kind of takes your breath away, that's all the better.
The colors of the flower are red and then green, and they are quite vibrant.
Good, good.
And more green things as you go down the piece. And they came out of a back bar in a restaurant.
Oh.
In a hotel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've heard that, yeah, there are a lot of those pieces used in decorating public spaces during that period because, like I said, it was so popular back then with Louis Comfort Tiffany and all the glass work he had done. I can't give you an exact value, but I would, if you have someone that can help you or you know how to use the internet to find that out, I'd start looking for some of that. And look for 1920s stained glass. I mean, without seeing it, it's like they could go for a couple hundred dollars or a lot more because of, you know, you're saying they're 48 inches, which is a
pretty
quite
size.
Sizable piece.
Yeah.
So I think you have something special and it's worth taking a look at.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have a Facebook question along with a photo. Kay sent us something here. Looks like a silver-colored elephant, and there's a top. I think there's kind of a...
Looks like a hinged lid,
a hinged
maybe.
Lid, yeah. Wondering what it might be. What, she's just curious if you might know what this is and what it's used for.
Well, I have a feeling that was an inkwell.
Oh.
That would sit on the desk, and maybe there's a glass liner in there or not, but there probably was at one time if it's not there. And that's where the ink would be. So this would sit on the desk, and you dip the ink pen in there for writing. So you've got a nice little inkwell, and they're fun collectibles. They were made in all kinds of figures, and some are you know, glass, some are metal, some are, you know, big elaborate sets, and this looks like a pretty fun little piece.
Yeah, it does. Cute. And that's on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show if you want to see it. And I'm sure there'll be some more coming up, too. John and Chippewa Falls, thanks for calling. Hi. John, are you there? Maybe we lost John. Oh, a second. Oh, now let's try again. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for taking my call. I have some stamps from full sheets and blocks all the way back to the 1950s, and it's not a full collection all the way through, but pretty solid. But they're all just, you know, solid sheets sitting there. There's no documentation or anything with them. And I just don't know who you take it to or trust or whatever to get it evaluated. And the same thing with coins. I have, my father's got them back late 1700s. So, but the stamps are more important.
Yeah, the things like that, stamps and coins, are very specialized. And not every personal property appraiser can appraise those. And I don't do them myself because I don't feel I'm qualified to do them. I haven't studied them as much as I have other things. But what you should do is find a coin and a stamp dealer. And word of mouth is great to talk in your area who you know. The other thing is to take it to more than one dealer. I know that takes more time, but if two dealers are way off, then you find a third and get that opinion and try and find out that that way. And one thing you do not want to ever do is sell it to the person who's appraising it, because you can see the potential for conflict of interest. Oh, these aren't worth much, but I'll give you this amount for it, and actually they perhaps are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that... you know, people do buy, the dealers will buy to make a profit, but it's still a good idea to have someone that doesn't have any kind of interest in the product do your appraisal. And
well,
like I
our,
say...
In our area, Shirley, so how do you trust, do they have a storefront or are they bonded, licensed? I just don't even know where to start. I mean...
Yeah
most of them, you know, there are our storefront dealers, and you were from Chippewa Falls, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe in the Eau Claire area or maybe even up in the Twin Cities, if you're getting up that way, sometime you can make an appointment. You can also look on the websites of the International Society of Appraisers, the Appraisers Association of America, and the ASA, American Society of Appraisers, and find someone in your area that has a specialty in coins and stamps. And those people have codes of ethics that they abide by, and if you do feel there's a problem with them, you have some recourse.
Okay. I guess one final question. Do you leave the material there, or do you set up an appointment where you stay there with your material?
Well, I usually don't keep someone's material. For a lot of reasons, and one of them is if there's a big collection, someone might think they have a piece that's in there and actually didn't get put in that collection, and all of a sudden, where is it? If for some reason I have to keep it, I try and inventory it very thoroughly. And the other thing is, it's, you know, stamps. Maybe, you know, the sheet gets torn while it's in the hands of the appraiser, mm-hmm. and of course the appraiser should be insured against that. But they might come back and say, no, no, this was torn before, and perhaps it tore in transit or something. So I try not to do that. Now, if you have a huge, huge collection, it might be impractical to have a huge collection of coins done on the spot because of the time it takes, you know, and there's a lot to look at on each coin.
Mm-hmm. Lots to think about there, John. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Shirley Bauman, our guest today, certified personal property appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and also Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Great to have her along. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Cynthia Schuster sits in with for Kathleen Dunn. The House and Senate are struggling over immigration reform, and Cynthia's guest assesses whether any progress will actually be made, and that's today at 1 o'clock. Right now, talking about the world of appraisal with Shirley Bauman. Great to have her along, and thank you for listening in. If you may have a question about an object that you have, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1000. 1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show and post there. And by the way, Lori posted on my Facebook page, says, I just acquired a Renoir print from my mother. It's framed in a beautiful frame, but the print has slipped a bit. I know it was put in my childhood home in 1963. It's Renoir's Child in White. How do I find out its value?
Well, this is, again, that research project we're looking at. You want to, you've got the artist's name, you know it's a print and not a painting, and you know the title. So I would go and look for completed sales of that piece of art on an art website that has art auction results. One of them is Ask Art, and they probably have results. You might go to the free sites first and look at if any of the other auction houses are reporting sales of that print. And maybe what are there any galleries offering it for sale? Now, that's not exactly a true fair market value. That's an asking price, and we don't know if it'll sell for the asking price, but it will give you an idea of what that person and that gallery owner thinks it might be worth. And the more you can find, that's where you're going to see a pattern, and that's how you research it.
Lee in Lake Mills. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Larry and Ms. Bowman. I wish I could say I'm going to ask you a nice, easy question, but from my experience, it's not easy. My former wife and I have joint custody of a Tabriz Oriental carpet, large, probably 6x9, all silk carpet, probably 100 years old now. And we have a hard time evaluating how much to insure it for, or even when the time comes to sell it, how to determine its value.
Sure. And you're part of the way there, you know its size, you know what it's made of. You know, you said it was silk, you know where it was made. You want to look at it from the backside, get an idea of how many knots per square inch, if it was hand knotted or machine knotted. And you can see that hand knotting because it won't be exactly perfectly even. A machine knotting will make it very, very even. And the more knots per inch, usually the higher the value is because it's been more tightly woven and therefore will last longer. You also want to look at the condition. Are there wear problems? Is there color changes? Maybe because the sun was on a stretch of it and that part is faded now, or something spilled on it or whatever. So you want to look at that. You also want to look at the edges if they're fraying. And again, what the pattern is. You said you have a Tabriz, so that again gives you some information. And at the point of insuring it, you probably need an official appraisal on it, so that your insurer knows that it was looked at by either a rug dealer or an antiques appraiser that can value rugs. And that's what they would like to have for their records, because otherwise, if there is a loss, let's say there's a fire and it's gone, they would have no idea, really, what you had. And so photographs and then an appraiser's declaration of value is really what works best there. And just for everyone's sake, sometimes we can do forensic appraisals off of a photograph after a loss, but you'll never get the full value because we won't be able to say that we saw the item and this was the condition at the time of the loss.
How do you get, or let's say my experience in dealing with rug dealers is that there is what one forthcoming dealer said, he said, we really have a Persian mafia and we're not supposed to appraise other people's rugs.
Okay. Call an antiques appraiser. I've certainly done a lot of Oriental rugs in my career.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there are others.
I did put it in front of an associate conservator at the DM Museum, and he had some suggestions, and again, it's you know, with color and all the variables, we know how many knots are in the rug. It's close to a million, actually.
Mm.
And So it's actually hand knotted. You can see the variability in it, that sort of thing. But boy, even if someone, I don't see how anyone can actually do that, because the value is what someone will pay, and the only time you know that is when you put it on an auction.
Well, or something similar. There are other Tabriz, silk Tabriz rugs, and what we do is we look at sales records and see what they have sold for, and we look at it to find one as similar to yours as possible.
Yeah.
And say it's similar size and as close to the date as possible. So what are they selling for currently in that style and size of rug? And that's really where you get your value.
Did the site suggestions you mentioned earlier in the program contain those sites?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Mm-hmm. I can go to Larry's website and find that, I suspect.
Yeah. We'll have that posted up on the website.
Well, thanks. It's really a job to appraise one of these things.
There's
so many variables. And
that's right. That's
absolutely. Yep. Lee, thank you very much for calling. Good luck with the with writing this down. I appreciate it very much. We have another rug. As a matter of fact, John sent us a photo. It says, my daughter recently acquired this wool rug. It's a 7'9" by 10'. At the Cedarburg Flea Market. No history from the seller. Quick Google search leads me to believe it could be Anatolian Turkish kilim rug, possibly from the Kaya tribe, from symbols included in the design. Do you have any thoughts on origin or age or estimated value?
Well, it's very hard to tell that from a picture in terms of value, but I think you could be on the right track with it being Turkish, and we see that from the symbols that are in it. I don't think it's an antique rug. I think it's a little bit more modern age, and we might be talking, 50s or something of that nature. And I say that because of the colors involved. And again, the internet might not give me exactly true colors, but the kind of greens and yellows in there lead me to believe that those are more modern dyes than the older colors. And the lighter orangey red, I think the older ones would be a deeper, maybe sort of a more cranberry red than that.
Hmm.
So that is a situation that you've got to look at. And then again, if there's wear patterns and such. But I think there are many oriental rug books that you can look at and websites. And again, it's by the pattern. And look, what is it made out of? Is it silk? Is it wool?
Mm-hmm.
And again, machine knotted will be likely to be more modern than the hand knotted ones. Not always, but I think that's probably the case with this one.
Artisan Richland Center, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, I'm here to announce that Richland Center will be having a small roadshow, or should I say a medium, with some good appraisers, not local people, and this will be in the middle of August. And I'm going to tell you what three things I'm taking. I have the space program saved, and I have a 10-cent comic book already appraised at 250, mint condition. And then I have a letter written by a lady who was at Teddy Roosevelt's inauguration in 1905. And I have three books autographed and letters from Svetlana Stalin, otherwise known as Lana Peters.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be taking those three things.
Very cool.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds like a great time, and it sounds like you've got some wonderful things.
Well, I'm on write a book, too, about her, because her life with Taliesin was a humble.
Right.
Humbling
right.
thing, but whatever. I'm working on it.
Well, they're quite specialty items, so it'd be interesting to hear your story about how you got them sometime.
And the appraisal fair is when, artist?
Well, in the middle of August, I think.
In the middle of
maybe
August.
The end. But it's just something the Humane Society has copped up here. And it's to make money, and they want, somebody that probably knows more about appraisals than our general people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited because I've got more than those three things to take. But, yes, I knew Lana very well. I'm about the only one in Richmond Center that did know her, and this is why I'm writing a book.
Oh, well, good for you. Maybe someday that book might be worth a little money.
Could be.
Could be. You never know. Thank you very much, artist. We have Becca sent us on Facebook a photo of, it looks like almost like a Betty Boop type figurine. Can you tell me what it might? I looked it up on the person who, there's somebody who signed it, and here's the signature. Matilda Garski signed it. It's a work. And this is a woman, a young woman that's got gold boots and a gold out kind of suit on, a swimsuit on of some sort, legs spread, looking like she's a real athlete.
That's right. And, it's hard to tell that the way the name is, that's not a famous maker that we know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the day, painting ceramics was a very popular hobby. And women would get together and do that. Just, I guess, like today, they get together and scrapbook or quilt. And it could be that someone made that in one of these kinds of events and decorated it. And they would have been a pretty good decorator because it looks like they've written some information down there at the bottom and a nice little gold script down there.
Yeah.
So I would think it's probably one of those items that we can't really determine who made it or, you know, where it was made. And I think it's probably one of those ceramic home type ceramic or ceramic shop.
Probably not a lot of value.
Not a lot of value on that, but it's a cute little item.
Yeah. An email from Mike in Milwaukee saying, you mentioned that advertising memorabilia is hot now, and my father subscribed to Gentry magazine in the early 50s. I found a complete set of pristine copies still in their original mailers. They're filled with unique advertising, including fabric swatches, etc. I've Googled it and checked on eBay and haven't found any information. Just wondering where I would sell something like that.
Well, in the world of magazines, the 50s and older isn't real collectible yet. The collectors really like things actually 40s and earlier, and the reason I say 40 is we have a lot of World War II advertising at that time. You'll see a lot of people, you know, men in uniform, soldiers in uniform and that in the advertising. For example, Greyhound bus, you know, jump the Greyhound bus to get home after service and that kind of thing. So in terms of the 50s, not real collectible just yet. And paper is collectible, though, the advertising. It's not probably going to be extremely valuable advertising. Coca-Cola was one that did a lot in the period. And when you get those out, you know, some people frame them, hang them on their walls, enjoy them that way. And then we're talking about, probably $5 to $10 in advertisement. And so when you get a lot of them, that adds up. But each item is probably not real valuable.
Listener Mike wrote to us as well, my father was in the U.S. Army in World War II, stationed in Germany, and he brought back German Army souvenirs, he's gotten quotes, from that time. Officers' swords, daggers, a flag, some with swastikas on them. I'd like to get rid of this stuff, but I don't want it to end up in the hands of neo-Nazis. So how do I find a reputable dealer who is interested in it for historical purposes?
That's a very good question. And there are, like, for example, eBay has outlawed the sale of Nazi memorabilia and that kind of thing. I have had some at my auctions, and the reason I sell them is because it is part of history. And the last thing I sold with the swastika on was a Hitler Youth knife. And it did go into the hands of a collector that I know, a knife collector. I think your local auctioneers know their market, and if you sell them that way, you probably be in a good position because they know who the collectors are in their area.
There we go. So get a hold of a local dealer.
Mm-hmm. Or auctioneers.
Linda and Butternut, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello. I'm wondering if there is value to reproduction prints. I have a Salvador Dali, and it's a Ganymede reproduction.
Well, the whole Dali world is quite interesting. There are some that have been authorized to be reproduced from his works and some that are not. And I don't know off the top of my head about this particular one. It's even the Dali specialists have trouble figuring this out. And I have been acquainted with one of the country's leading experts in this area, and even he has had his problems in the world of valuing these Dalis. The reproduction prints could very well have some value, but it might be in the, you know, couple $100s if it was an authorized reproduction, not in the thousands as his original artwork would have gone.
Of course. Do you have knowledge of the Ganymede reproductions?
I don't off the top of my head. That's something I would have to research.
And it states on the front of the print that it was originally an oil on canvas 80 by 45 inches from the Glasgow Art Gallery.
Oh, then it sounds, well, art gallery, it's not a museum. It's hard to say it with that information. Again, that's something I would just have to research.
Well, there you go.
I'm very sorry, but I don't know everything off the top of my head.
There we go, Linda. Thank you for calling. Good luck. Carol in Oak Creek, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a small piece of artwork. It's about 3.5 by 5, and it's set in a mirror frame. And I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a Mid-East skyline in crystal sterling, and it says it's by the artist Saad, S-A-A-D. Have you ever heard of anything made of crystal sterling silver?
No, that's something I haven't worked with. I'm sorry.
I have looked up on the internet, and I found a few things, but not quite what I was looking for to find out if it was worth anything. It's quite striking and quite pretty.
I'm sure it is. I don't know exactly what they're calling crystal sterling silver.
Well, what they made it, it looks like, what do you call it? It's not just a flat piece of the skyline. It's got it's bumped up where they got domes and other parts of the city tops.
Yeah. The thing that is confusing me is the title crystal sterling silver.
Yeah.
Does it look like sterling silver? Does it look like crystal?
Oh, yes, it does look like sterling silver, but to make it, it had to be in a crystal, in a flowing form to get this to look like art.
Okay. I'm really sorry. I can't help you with that.
Okay. Well, I gave it a try.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have Gwen in Lemira next. Hi, Gwen.
Hello. Thank you. I'm an interesting program. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I have a two pieces of silk thread art from Japan in 1920. One is quite large. It's about 1 by 3 feet, and it's sort of like embroidery, but it's silk thread and very, very fine and very, very close together. It's framed, and so I'm not about to take it out of the frame to look at the back of it. Somebody who knows what they're doing will have to do that.
That's a good plan.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the best we can do then. Take it somewhere and have them look at it.
Yes, and I would take it to someone who not only knows Japanese art, but textiles.
Okay.
Because textiles need to be handled in a specific way. So especially if they're fragile from, you know, getting close to 100 years old here, that's what I would suggest you do.
And I find these people listed where?
Well, you can find some of them, as I mentioned before, from the websites of the appraisal associations, professional appraisal associations. And if they're accredited and specialized in textiles and Japanese art or Asian art, That's what you'll need to look for.
And I believe we have those posted up on, some of them posted up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Gwen, so you could check there and get that list. A Facebook question from Teresa. I have a question about a magazine I bought at a rummage sale a few weeks ago, the May 1964 Ladies' Home Companion. Special Kennedy issue with Jack and Jackie on the cover. Any thoughts on what it might be worth? It's in fair condition, not missing any pages. She's wondering, should I hold on to it? Any advice might be appreciated.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I have seen dozens, if not hundreds, of magazines with the Kennedys. Mm. We're still in a period where people remember them, and everybody kept those from the assassination period and when he was president, the whole Camelot theme that went on there. And so we still have an awful lot of them around. And at this point, most of those magazines are maybe $5, $10 with their information in them. So here's the point. If you need to get rid of things and you're not going to be saving it for a long time, that's one thing. I don't think they're going to be valuable till till we're long gone. So if you have heirs that are collectors, maybe they want to keep it.
Well, that's probably good advice. Jim in Cloquet, Minnesota, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. She said I got a RCA Victor. It's called a talking machine. It's in real good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And this one has a date on it. It says 1904. The crank works, the spring works, and we got a record that says Shuffle Off to Buffalo. That sounds real good, and even have a jar full of little needles.
Ah.
It stands about 44 inches, and it's in the cabinets and stuff is in real good shape. It's got little roller wheels on it, and just was wondering what something like that would be worth.
Well, just to let the listeners know, when you say the talking machine, that's actually a phonograph.
Correct.
And
with the little doors in the front, and that's where the speaker is.
Right, right. And you'd crank it up, and the sound would come out. And they're great. They're RCA Victor was the one who made the Victrola. That's a little bit later period. And just to let everybody know, whenever they think of an old crank-up phonograph, a lot of people call it a Victrola, but really only the Victors are Victrola, those made by RCA Victor. There are ones made by Edison and Brunswick and other companies. So anyway, on the phonograph that you have, it's probably in the range of, does it have a oak or mahogany case? Wood?
It's wood, but it's I can't tell you what kind it is.
Yeah,
it's
probably one or the other.
Real dark color.
From that period. Yeah, the varnish often darkens, so it's hard to even tell what the grain of the wood is. But they're probably in the range of about $250 to possibly $300 these days.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Jim. Ronnie in Highland, Wisconsin. Oops. Instead of Ronnie in Highland, Wisconsin, Ronnie, we'll get to you in a minute. Let's go to George in Chippewa Falls. Hi, George.
Good morning. I've listened to this show for many years. My passion is records. I'm 64. I've been collecting and jockeying records since about 1962 or 63. So I've accumulated a collection of about 50,000. But I guess reiterate what your guest had said. I'm an auctioneer realtor, but how I get my information, I subscribe to an email service, and once a week I get an email, and any sales of the more collectible ones, it has them documented and comes to me. But then part of it, when you subscribe to the service, then you're also obligated to return that. If you, with your documented sales on something that shows different in their catalog or their email, then you report that back to them. So it's good, fresh, solid information. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, too many people on records, I've got an Elvis, I've got a Beatles. Well, certainly some of these are valuable. But the more valuable are the offbeat ones. For instance, on some of the one of the first ones the Beatles put out, Meet the Beatles. The records, in a lot of ways, are like books. It'll be a first edition, a first pressing. Mm-hmm. First release, then, may have some small differences, perhaps on the label or perhaps on the tracks. Collectors, of course, want these. So you may have five different versions, pressings, and the first pressing, let's say, has a value of $500, but then the subsequent ones, you're lucky to get a dollar for them. And the other thing that I just wanted to also bring up is forgeries, copies. With records, the same thing occurs. What happens is the more valuable ones, you have to be very careful because there's reproductions put out. And just as an example, Sun Records, Elvis and a lot of the other ones on Sun are quite valuable. However, because of their value, there's forgeries put out there. The original on the 45s have what's known as three punch marks. If you rub your hand or your finger along the inside of the, just outside the hole, you'll feel those three pyramid almost marks. They're in a pyramid shape. And generally, not 100%, generally denotes an original. And the other ones, then, of course, are different. But at any rate, I enjoy your show, and I just wanted to add that information.
George, thanks.
Yes, I appreciate that. And just, listen to George's enthusiasm for his collection.
Yeah.
And the collectors that are enthusiastic learn everything they can about what they are collecting. And those are really good sources of information.
Absolutely. Thanks, George. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Shirley Bowman, our guest today, certified personal property appraiser, a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bowman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Both those, we have links to them on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, so you can go right there and get linked right to it. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network. We're talking with Shirley Bowman today. We'd love to hear from you with your questions as we visit with her about antiques and appraisals. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. And lots of people are posting photos and questions on my Facebook page. And if you want to see some of those or post one of your own, just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Speaking of that, Jane has a copper teapot, kind of a cool-looking pot. That she thinks it's Skultuna, Swedish. She's seen similar teapots, but not exact matches. The only markings she can find her on the handle, 1.5 LIT and CJJ. Very dirty. Can I clean it up, or is that going to reduce the value?
Well, I would say do not clean it up. Just, brush it a little bit, and don't use any polishes on it or that kind of thing. No chemicals. One thing antiques dealers and collectors like is the original patina. And sometimes that patina includes the dirt that gets worn into it. And I haven't seen anything exactly like it either. I think you do have something very nice. The rim around the bottom of it, about a couple inches from the bottom, indicates that it probably sat into a frame of some sort, which may have kept it over a fire or something to keep the water hot. So I think you've got something that's pretty nice, and I would not clean it.
Ronnie in Highland, your turn. Thanks, Ronnie.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a Russian teapot. Stands about 18 to 20 inches high. And it's got brass. It's all brass. It's got brass handle, and it's got some design on it. I've talked to a guy who was he's an appraiser, but he had no idea how to even try to find anything on it.
Hmm.
Well, do you have any, are there any markings on it?
Not that I can see.
Okay. That's usually where we start when we're researching something. But I would, if you can't find anything, are you sure it's Russian?
Well, it was my wife's. Mm-hmm. It was her ma's, and she came from either Germany or Russia.
Okay. Well, that sometimes we get the stories wrong over the generations. It gets passed down and something changes a little bit. So look for the same kind of teapot, but don't limit it to just Russian, because maybe it was German, maybe it was Polish, maybe, you know, they did a little traveling in Europe and found it. So look that direction for some of those things. I think you said it was brass, so look for brass teapots from the period you think it has come from and see if you can find something similar.
Thank you very much for calling. Dave and Melrose up next. Dave, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks for calling.
Good. Say, I've got a question here. I bought an old farmhouse back in November, and I bought it as an estate.
Mm-hmm.
So it included everything that was on the property.
Okay.
Now, there's so much stuff there. There's from tools to magazines, old phonographs, tractors. There's just dishes. There's just a ton of stuff there. It's kind of overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really quite sure how to deal with this whole thing, to try to sort through the stuff and then get rid of it.
Sure. My best advice is to go and find a reputable auctioneer. Have them come over and take a look, because they can set up auctions where, you know, they can sell the whole variety of items.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when you have that much and you're really not sure, they can figure out what it is, and they can draw in people to buy the variety of kinds of things that you have. And you get it sold in, you know, a day or two, depending on how much you have, once the auction is set up. So that's where I would go with that.
Yeah.
There's just too much stuff to try to, you know, sell it myself, you know. But I did talk to one guy. He came out there, and what he wanted to do, he wanted to kind of go through there and pick out what he wanted.
Yes.
And then put it out in the yard and then make me an offer on it. Where I kind of thought that was, I didn't really like that idea, because there's some stuff in there that could be way more valuable than I have a clue.
Exactly. And that's one of the things a lot of people do. They do that, and a dealer or a collector will come and kind of cherry pick and pick out the things that are the best items that they want. And then you're remaining a lot of lesser quality items, and at that point you call in the auctioneer or someone to help you sell. And what's there is just the remainders that aren't going to draw people to an auction. So I would contact the auctioneer first. They have had the experience of selling these kinds of things, and you're on the same side of the table with them. They would normally take a percentage of the sale price. So the more they sell it for, the more you make and the more the auctioneer makes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, sure. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Dave, for calling. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, hello.
I have two items. They're both from my father. He was born blind, and so in World War II, he was 4F, and to contribute to the war effort, he served on the ration board. And I have a ration coupon book from World War II,
mm-hmm.
and I also have his, he and my mother were old enough that they enrolled in Social Security when it first began, and I have his original Social Security card, which is metal.
Oh, my goodness. Nice. I didn't even know they made them out of metal.
Nope, they did.
I didn't either until I found it.
Mm-hmm. They pressed in the numbers in a little sheet metal, somewhat similar to the process of making a dog tag for the military.
And it has the red and blue and silver.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It looks very similar to modern Social Security cards, except that it's metal.
Right, right.
And it's bigger.
Mm-hmm. The ration book, I can tell you that I see an awful lot of those. People just put them away in a drawer or in a book, and they turn up. And so there's actually quite a lot of them around, and they're not particularly valuable in my experience. $10, $15, something like that. And I'm not positive about the Social Security and the metal card.
He's long deceased.
Yeah, which is a good thing. If I am real careful in my sales that I try not to sell anything with personal information because of the whole identity theft situation, and I try just not to do that.
I actually wasn't thinking of selling it. I'm just curious as to whether it has any value.
Well, I believe it does, but I don't know exactly what to tell you on that, because it's certainly a curiosity to have something that old and from the original. I'm trying to think of collectors who would buy that, which helps us know what the value is. And I'm just not positive where to go with that.
You can ponder on that one for a while. Think about it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And there might be a site that she could go to.
Yes, I would think doing some Google work on that, researching.
I bet if you put in metal social security
card, you'll get something out.
Something's bound to pop up. Yeah. I got to believe that.
Yeah.
Well, this is fun. We're having a good time here today visiting with Shirley Bauman. She's a certified personal property appraiser. She's a registered Wisconsin auctioneer, and she owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Talking with her, obviously, about appraising, and you may be able to join in, too, with your questions. I hope you do. She'll be back with us right after the news. If someone told you that you could appear on Antiques Roadshow, what would you take? Have you always wondered whether something you have is worth a lot of money or maybe only sentimental value? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Shirley Bauman with us today is a certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And she comes by a few times a year to help us understand the value of things that we've collected and how the appraisal and auction markets really work. Always a lot of fun when she comes by. And Shirley, thanks again for being with us. Appreciate it very much.
You bet. It's my pleasure to be here.
Lots of callers online with questions about what they have. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Lots of people posting on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well, including Jean, who has a Coca-Cola sign, wondering if it's any value. It's same on both sides, and it's has no rust or chips on it. It's about 2 feet by 20 inches, wondering if there's some value there.
Well, I can say there is some value there, but there's some questions I'd have to have answered before I could actually say the amount. I don't know if this is a porcelain baked-on sign or if it's painted metal. I assume it's not wood because she talks about rust or chips, so I assume it's metal. And a two-sided sign is desirable compared to one-sided, and it has Coca-Cola, which is there's many Coke collectors. I would say, assuming that it looks like there's maybe some just surface dirt on there that could easily be washed off, that, you know, collectors would be over that. This is one that would have hung up on the side of a building. Mm-hmm. You see the right end is rounded and the left end would have been attached to the building. And, you know, a couple feet, several hundred dollars, certainly.
Yeah.
And maybe even higher, depending on all of the details we don't really know.
And Steve has a Fontanini numbered or signed nativity set, wonders about value and suggested places to sell something like that.
Yeah, that's an Italian manufacturer of these, and they're very collectible. And I know that people have paid a lot of money for these figures, and they're very well done. The thing about them is perhaps they're a little bit too new to a little too many of them made to be real valuable right now, to have appreciated anyway. And I would suggest that the best place on that would be an online auction, because you'd be dealing with a large audience there of people who are trying to fill in their set. Maybe they don't have a shepherd they're looking for or something on that order.
Cheryl sent us a really interesting photograph of a lamp. I have never seen anything like this lamp. I don't even know how to describe it. It's metal of some kind, used to have some type of shade inside of it on a metal support. Are you familiar with this one?
Well, I've seen metal lamps and shades, and I'm not sure if this was the original paint on it or if someone decided to add to it by painting the floral designs in different colors. Normally, the ones I see didn't have them in different colors. They'd be either a kind of a bronzed, mm-hmm. patinated bronze, or even a white or a creamy color. The thing to do first is to look on the base of the lamp and all over the inside of the shade and the finial and see if you can find a name of who made it. There are all kinds of manufacturers in that period, so it might be there and it might not. Mo Bridges, for example, is one out of Milwaukee that used to make lamps somewhat like this. And what I think was in the areas that are open that right now was probably glass, a slag glass, which is a, you know, maybe a color of a glass. And that broke out, and maybe enough broke out that it hasn't been replaced. And you see kind of little metal protrusions on each side of those vertical staves, so that could be where the glass was held in. And a stained glass worker might be able to mm-hmm. to replace those for you. And beyond that, I really can't say a lot, but you know, in the antique shop, lamps like this that are complete, you know, can bring $300-$400 or so, depending on, you know, condition and if it's original paint and things.
Jean in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some English silver, and some of it, there are small bits of sterling, in particular a claret jug, which is a cut glass or crystal with a sterling neck band and spout and a lid and a handle in sterling.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how old it is. I think more than 100 years. And then I have a lot of silver plate. One in particular, a tray 12 inches wide, and it weighs a couple of pounds. And it's Maffin Brothers Queen's Plate, number 2729. And it has a presentation engraved into it to a relative, March 21st, 1904, and it has feet and a very ornate scrolled edge. And I just don't know who would know with English silver what it's worth. I have also, you know, a tea service with all the parts in silver plate and a coffee pot in silver plate, and that's about 100 years old probably.
Hmm. Well, in today's market, there's quite a big difference between sterling silver, silver plate, and possibly even English or European silver. The American standard for sterling silver is 92.5% silver. The older European and English standards were lower. It could be maybe 80, 85% silver. Silver plate, the reason that's so heavy is that it was an alloy underbase with just a very light plating of the silver on top. And, you know, the silver prices had been high. They've gone down a little bit. There's still speculators out there. And unfortunately, a lot of our antique silver has been melted down in refineries when the prices are high.
The fact that it's Queen's Plate, I thought I heard on one of the antique shows that this was one of the desirable Sheffield plates that usually brought more.
Yes, and I'm sure it's, you know, a very nice set. The claret jug sounds beautiful, and we see those in the 100, 150, 200 range often.
Okay, it has a lion, the symbol for the sterling, a lion and some sort of a shield and an A on it.
Those are the hallmarks from English silver, and those things tell us where it was made, the assayer's mark, the city. There's a lot of information that can come from those, and I do look those up to make sure I don't get them confused, because if the lion's facing one way, it can mean something. If it's facing the other way, it means something else. And But silver plate sets, you know, can go into hundreds of dollars, where if they were sterling, they'd be thousands of dollars. So we're in the difference is, you know,
obvious
tenfold or more. And not seeing them, I can't really give you a lot of information. But the fact that yours is dated helps people understand that it's over 100 years old, too, and that's desirable to collectors.
Yeah. Thank you, Gene. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Cornelia in Madison, hello.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband, several years ago when we lived in a different state, went into this little shop and purchased, I think it's a lithograph by Picasso, and it's of a young man with curly hair. He's holding a lamb like it's for sacrifice. And we looked it up. We have several books on Picasso, and it looks like it was a study for a sculpture. And it is signed. But other than that, we don't know anything about it.
Well, that, again, is something I'd have to do some research on because, you know, Picasso is a very famous artist, famous name.
And prolific, yeah.
Yeah, and you've got to make sure it's his actual signature, number one. And if it's a lithograph, if it's a print, is the signature actually hand-signed or printed on there?
It's hand-signed.
And you're certain of that?
Yes.
Okay. And then is it actually in Picasso's hand?
Yeah.
And that's a thing that, you know, a signature expert can tell you that. If it is his hand, if it is his study for a sculpture, it could certainly be a valuable piece, but I just can't say right off what the value is.
It's also numbered.
Well, that means when the numbers are there, it means that's whatever. If it says, you know, 10/20, that means it was the 10th print and 20 were made.
Yeah.
Right.
So the higher the number,
the less the value.
The less the value, usually, because there are that many more made of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And is there a signature expert that I could look up here in Madison?
I think you'd be better off finding one on the internet. I don't know of anyone in Madison.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
And Cornelia, just a little aside story on Picasso, which I probably have told on the air before, but I read somewhere that when he bought things, he paid everything by check. And then he would doodle. He would doodle a little figure on the check, and people would not cash the check because it was a Picasso.
That's a drawing, that's right.
Drawing, and so he wrote checks for even a couple of dollars, and people, it's worth it to have the
drawing and his signature
on a check. And so he got away, he got a lot of things free.
Yeah.
So that was a wonderful story, and I hope it's true.
Yeah.
Ralph, it sounds like it could be him, that's
it
for
does.
Sure. Ralph in Sturgeon Bay. Hello, thanks for calling.
Hi. I have received in my father's estate two Mondrian drawings, and I know these are by Fritz Mondrian, who was the uncle of Pete Mondrian, and they are in their original frames, both matching gold leaf frames with a black, painted black mat and gold leaf trim, and they're both traditional Dutch scenes. And I'm wondering, first of all, is there anyone who can give me an estimated value on them? But moreover, who can I get to check the condition in terms of conservation and maybe do some restorative work on them?
Sure. And you are asking the right questions there. I appreciate that. First of all, in terms of value, I just can't tell you that because I haven't researched his works for a long, long time, and things change. So I can't help you with that just on the air now. But what you might want to do with in terms of getting the conservation is get them to an art museum. And I don't know what you have in Sturgeon Bay, but certainly in Green Bay, there's, I believe it's the Neville Museum.
Right.
And they might be able to tell you what needs to be done and recommend someone they know. They do keep lists of resources. Museums can't value things for you because that's a conflict of interest for them because they're trying to acquire things for their museums. But they certainly right. keep information on resources because they need conservators at different times sure. and things. So that's what I would do to find that information and get a reputable person.
Very good.
Okay. So you think that Green Bay would be, I mean, that's close, but would Milwaukee or Chicago be a better
well,
place to go?
Perhaps. I can't really say that for sure, but I bet if you start with the Neville, they would be able to tell you, and maybe they would refer you to someone in Milwaukee and Chicago. So I think I would just start there, and you may then broaden your search if you either don't feel comfortable or maybe they're suggesting that you go to mm-hmm. Milwaukee or Chicago. Certainly the Milwaukee Art Museum would have information, and I know that the Art Institute in Chicago is very helpful to individuals as well.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much for calling. An email from Donna in Madison, who has two limited edition collectible Disney watches from the 1980s and a couple of antique mantle clocks, including one from Seth Thomas around 1865. Trying to sell them, I've contacted local watch clock groups and a couple of dealers. No luck. Would you have any suggestions? She doesn't feel comfortable with eBay. Although one of my Disney watches was for sale there from another party.
Sure. The thing about the watches, and I don't know obviously what the other party was asking for it, but it could have been anything. But in my opinion, of course, Disney is always beloved, but the 80s is a little bit new. And when she says limited edition on here, we don't know what the edition was limited to. It could have been limited to 500,000 watches, which means there's a lot of them out there. So I really, when we're getting to those modern collectibles, it's that way with all of them. Like I said, Mickey and Disney characters are a little bit different subject because people tend to really love them no matter what. As far as the mantle clocks, I think you're probably not having much luck right now because you're talking about items in the Victorian period. And Victorian items are really not in favor right now. The individuals aren't buying them for their homes. The hot thing right now in home decor is mid-century modern, which is the 1940s to 60s.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit out of favor right now. I did, sell them. I know auctioneers sell them. I sold a couple at a sale last weekend, but they don't bring nearly, at an estate sale, they don't bring nearly the money that they had been bringing. So if, you're willing to take the prices they're bringing right now, I'd say contact someone who does sales and auctions and sell them that way.
Roger emailed, has a 10-inch Tiffany Favril blue harp floor lamp. We've had different ideas as to its worth. Curious about it. The shade's in perfect condition.
Well, that sounds like a very special piece. The floor lamp is, they're sought after more than the table lamps generally. And if the base and the lamp are both in good condition, that's great news for you. What we do with researching Tiffany lamps is we look inside the frame and try to come up with a number they might have given it. Some even have little tags on them, and that will tell you that the studios thought it was an especially good one of that type. So look for those numbers and any of that stuff. Plus, there's also a lot out there about Tiffany right now. You know, we see people bringing Tiffany items into the roadshow, so you might even go to the roadshow archives on the internet and see about it, some Tiffany floor lamps. And, you know, they can be worth it. It depends on the intricacy of the workmanship on it, the condition, the size, just everything. But I would say I would definitely know you have something of value. Exactly how much is something that I can't say without seeing the item.
We have we've had questions about World War II items, and a caller recommended the Portage, Wisconsin World War II History Museum as a resource for people trying to learn more about their World War II memorabilia, or possibly as a place to donate items, too.
Exactly. And that is a wonderful museum up there. And again, like I said, they're probably not going to give you values because they're in the business of acquiring things for the museum. So it's a conflict of interest for them. But you can certainly learn because they have information up there. And if you do donate items to a museum, a historical society, whatever, you can take the tax deduction for that. And it's in, you know, you have to, it's called a non-charitable contribution, non-cash charitable contribution. And there's 8284, 8283 is the number of the form of the IRS that has to be completed by the donor and the person receiving the donation. And if you don't have a value, then you need to have an appraisal done so you can have an appropriate value on your donation.
And Amy had a piece that's up on my Facebook page here. It looks like, is it a plate?
It's kind of a beautiful serving plate, maybe, or tray.
She's had it at least 25 years. Her mother bought it at a yard sale. She kept her perfume bottles on it.
She used it as a dresser tray, and some of those things would be. It looks like it's got a ceramic insert with, I don't know if it's sterling or silver-plated frame on the exterior of it. And again, we don't know who made it. There might be a back mark on it, a back stamp that tells us. So if it's a famous maker, it'll make it worth more than someone who is not. And researching those things, I would always use that manufacturer's name first and start there with looking at it. A silver-plated piece, if the rim is silver-plated and we've got a nice ceramic insert, might be a $50 item, I don't know for sure. Or if it's sterling, it'll certainly be a lot more. And again, the name of the maker.
Shirley, we are out of time. It's flown by. Thank you so much.
It always does.
Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Shirley Bauman is a personal property appraiser. She's a registered Wisconsin auctioneer, owns Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. We've got links to her sites on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Plus, you might want to go there just to see the photos and all of the things that people have sent in. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but we never do when Shirley's on. Tomorrow on a Garden Talk, Laura Joel joins us. She's an extension specialist for Woody Ornamentals. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.